former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What's going on, everybody? Happy Thursdays. We welcome you in to the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. Excited to welcome our newest VSiN affiliate today in Lynchburg, Virginia, on the Virginia Talk Radio Network, 93.3 FM, 1320 AM. And you are in for a treat because while, yes, this is primarily an NFL show, Michael Lombardi is also a long-suffering Philadelphia 76ers fan. And while it was a tough watch for a while there, Michael, your boy woke up in the fourth quarter and they got it done.
Yeah, you know, I appreciate having Lynchburg here. I often do the Fast Eddie Lane show in Lynchburg. Wonderful, wonderful supporter of VSiN and a good friend of mine. And so it's great to have his network here, his radio network on our picking up the Lombardi Line and hearing your voice, which we'll hear later in the program. But look, it wasn't pretty. It was exactly what I thought it was going to be. Thank God that Jimmy Butler got hurt. I don't mean that in a bad way, but Jimmy Butler's injury did impact the game. And, you know, I got to be honest, I texted to you. I don't think I smiled as loudly as I smiled when I heard that Doris Burke, when the show started, she said, I thought Embiid was exhausted after warmups. Yeah. I mean, she's the only one besides me and Howard Eskin that'll at least say something about his conditioning.
Yeah, and it was bad for the first three quarters. He looked gassed. He looked thrown off by the Miami zone defense. He had 11 points the first three quarters, 3 of 13 from the floor, 0 for from 3. But like I said, he woke up in the fourth quarter, had 11 fourth quarter points, hit a couple threes, the big assist on that Kelly Oubre go-ahead shot, key plays and key moments. The 38 minutes were the most that he's played since returning from the injury. But you said it, that Jimmy Butler injury was significant, and he was in a lot of pain. Here's what he had to say after the game.
I mean, I don't want to jinx it, but I mean, I hope that I'm fine. I hope I wake up tomorrow and I can still stick and move. But, you know, right now I can't say that that's the case.
What happened on the play?
I mean, I fell and he landed and my knee just didn't do well, I guess. I don't know. But it's not a good feeling. I can tell you that.
Hate it for him. He's expected to miss several weeks now. So that's a big blow to a Heat team that went from the 8 seed playing to the Eastern Conference final a year ago. In that game coming up tomorrow against the Bulls, they're laying 1.5, total 207. So an unfortunate loss for them. They are still favored in the game. But to just close out some more thoughts on the 76ers, Michael, like they were getting booed at halftime, down 12. Nobody was into it.
We all know what was coming.
Was it just the Jimmy Butler injury or what did you think woke them up? I personally thought it was the free throw thing with the chicken nuggets got the crowd reengaged.
Yeah, I think, and Batum's shooting got him engaged, right? I mean, he started to hit shots. I mean, you know, for him to come in off the bench and to light it up and to score 20 points, play good defense, I mean, he gave him some life. I mean, nobody was really within a groove, and it looked like everything was a struggle. And they had a hard time with the zone. What, they scored 33 points in the first half? They had to score 60-some points, 66 in the second half. You know, they couldn't make a shot. And, you know, it was a classic Philadelphia. One thing about us Sixer fans, and Millie accused me last night of not being a fan because I wasn't really overtly rooting for them, but I know the reality of where this is going, so I temper myself. But I really feel like we know the car crash is coming. Like, we know it. And so, when it comes earlier than we think, then everybody gets mad. And his play is non-instinctive play. You wonder sometimes, like, what is going on? And he, like you said, he looked exhausted. And then the fourth quarter, I think the key to the game, though, Stormy, they were 13 for 13 in free throws made down the stretch. To me, that was the key because there was going to be an opportunity for them to come back. The Heat, they were making shots. And, you know, but the free throws kept extending the game and they missed any of those. I don't think they would be where they are today.
Millie and I must be one in the same because I feel like I'm always having to remind you, you are a fan, in fact. And so, okay, so the 76ers do win. They obviously do not cover the 5.5. A really bad beat on the under. You talked about the points scored. It was 89-88 with just over 3 minutes to play. Scored 32 more points down the stretch. So you lose by the hook, depending on the number that you got there. there. Just a really, really tough beat. The 76ers now cement their spot as a 7 seed against the 2-seeded Knicks. And they are a slight favorite in that series, minus 115, the Knicks minus 105. But if I'm New York, I might be licking my chops a little bit after what I saw yesterday.
Why? Why are they a favorite? I mean, I was working on this morning because I didn't pay much attention during the regular season, but they played 4 games during the regular season. The Sixers won one, 79-73. Embiid, I don't think he played in any of them because they didn't start playing until after the first of the year. But the Knicks dominated all 3 of those games. They were double-digit wins for the Knicks. They weren't close games at all. Now, I understand their best player, but I don't know why. Now, I know Julius Randle isn't going to play, but handling Brunson's going to be a real issue. And, you know, the Sixers go cold. I mean, Tobias Harris, for all they paid him, you know, he can't even make a layup half the time. So I don't understand it. If anything, I would have thought it would have been a pick'em type series, because I don't see how you can say the Sixers are favorite. It'll be a physical push you around. I mean, Thibodeau's a really good coach. He understands how to get underneath their skin. And he's going to try to run them and wear them down. I mean, look, it's going to be hard, I believe, that Embiid plays 7 games in a row. I know they'll get days off in between, but look, this guy's not in shape to play those games. Yeah. He gets exhausted.
Yeah, and it was clear. And Jalen Brunson's been on a tear, too. So we'll see how that series shakes out. We'll talk plenty more NBA throughout the course of the show. VSiN's own Mike Somich, professional handicapper, host of The Handle. He's going to join us coming up in a little bit this hour. We'll also have our guy Mike Palm, VP of Circa Resort and Casino, where I'm broadcasting from, join us for the final half hour of the program. But for now, Michael, let's get back to a little NFL talk, because there are plenty of news or noise candidates that came through over the last 24 hours. Let's roll it.
Is it news?
Corleone is a man who insists on hearing bad news immediately.
Or just noise.
Are you going to act like this is news?
Just noise.
Let's separate the impactful from the insignificant with one simple question. News or noise?
So yesterday while we were on the air, Bill Belichick was on Pat McAfee and said, when it comes to the pre-draft reports from the media, to tread lightly because of the agent's impact in that conversation. Nobody wants their player to get drafted higher than them. Take a listen to what Bill had to say.
The biggest newsmakers here quietly are the agents. You know, when the agent hears, well, you know, my player could go anywhere from the second or the third round, you add one to that and say, well, you know, these GMs or these teams are talking about taking my guy in the first round. I've never done that. I've never told an agent, hey, we're going to take your guy in this round. We're going to take your guy with this, you know, with the 27th pick or the 31st pick or whatever pick it is we have. I don't think there's too many teams that do that. But I think the agents will say, hey, my guy's going to go at 31 to this team. My team guy's going to go at 17 to that team, that type of thing. And then that just generates interest in their players. So,
news or noise, Michael, it's the agents driving a lot of these media conversations, not the teams.
It's all agents. It's all agents, because I think a lot of this stuff is their way of promoting. Look, how do you get an A in the draft? How do you have good drafts? You kind of get endeared to the people that, you know, you're talking to. And these agents are giving out information to the mock drafters, and they know that they're going to move their players up the draft board. And so, you know, when an agent tells somebody who does mock draft, hey, I just talked to a team, man, they love our guy. God, they love our guy. I know they just went back in there and worked him out again. You know, I know they love him. But that doesn't really mean anything. So it's all driven. I think what he said was really important. When we do the show next Wednesday and Thursday, that's when the information of who likes who is going to come out to the forefront.
Yeah, he said those real leaks are within that 12-hour or so period coming up right before the draft. Those can be very, very accurate and helpful. The Commanders, Michael, we talked about it yesterday, hosted 4 quarterbacks and 20-plus players as part of their Mass Top 30 visits, but only Jaden Daniels got the VIP pickup treatment, according to Brandon Todd, D.C., who was, like, stalking people at the airport, got video of Jaden Daniels, saw that Dan Quinn and Adam Peters were there to pick him up. So while they were trying to be quiet about who maybe of the 4 they were most interested in, Jaden Daniels getting picked up by the head coach and GM, news or noise?
Do we have video evidence of this? Because I can't imagine that if you're trying to mask who you're picking, that Quinn and Peters are going to be at the airport. Now, maybe they're going to pick them all up. Maybe they went to everybody and got everybody there. They all came in at the same time. Do we know that? I'm not buying this one, Stormy. Okay. I'm sorry. Huh?
That's why we got to ask you the question.
I mean, that's stupid. That would just be stupid. Let me go get Daniels and everybody else just pick it up on the fly. I mean, how would you feel if you're Drake May and you know Daniels got picked up by the head coach and you got picked up by some intern? Come on.
So he doesn't. Come on. This Twitter account doesn't post. You don't actually see Jaden Daniels and Dan Quinn together. You see them in separate shots, but there are videos of all of the other prospects also being picked up. So
not buying it. Not buying it. No chance. Not buying it, Stormy. No way.
All right. Okay, last 30 seconds. Only three quarterbacks are set to attend the draft in Detroit on Thursday. Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May. No J.J. McCarthy, despite being a predicted top five guy. News or noise?
I think it's news because he probably wants to be with his family. Like, the worst thing you want to do is on the day where you're going to really enjoy it, be around your family. I mean, it's not a comfortable. I know it's fun to go down there and tour New York and do all the things, but I mean, I think you want to be with your family in your home environment. And then when you get drafted, you can then celebrate. You don't have to sit there. What do you do when you get, then all of a sudden you got to get on an airplane and fly somewhere? Just as easy to do it at home.
Yeah, I don't think that if there was a fear of him getting Will Levis, I don't think that's the reality. We've talked about it a lot. Sure, there will be four quarterbacks taken, JJ among those four. But will there be five is the big question. I keep on every day leaning more toward the fact that there will be. We're just getting started here on the Lombardi Line. When we come back, continuing our draft talk with our division deep dives. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back into the Lombardi Line. If you haven't already, make sure you check out the new and improved VSiN.com. Same great content you're used to, but a fresh new look. You get best bets from all of our VSiN show hosts, guests, and experts. Betting splits, exclusive articles, including one up right now from our own Michael Lombardi, how Jim Harbaugh will improve the Los Angeles Chargers. We also got a mock draft from Matt Eumanns, Adam Burke with a quarterback breakdown and potential number of quarterbacks to go in round one. All that and more right now at vsin.com. And speaking of the Chargers, Michael, as we start our division deep dive for today in the AFC West, we've been doing these each and every day and we'll continue in lead up to the draft next Thursday, going through each division and going through each team and figuring out, dissecting what we think they should and will do with their first selections in this year's draft. And so we're doing the AFC West. Let's start with the Los Angeles Chargers, Harbaugh's new squad, who has the number five overall selection, obviously. And there's been a lot of talk about the pieces that they have to replace in terms of Mike Williams, who was cut, Keenan Allen, who was traded to the Bears. You got Austin Eckler out of the building now, who's over with the Commanders in free agency. But all of the talk that Jim Harbaugh has been adamant about improving the offensive line and the importance of that group up front, to take an offensive lineman with that first selection, minus 175, wide receiver plus 200.
Here's where I think we have a real issue when it comes to people trying to predict what the Chargers will do. People that try to predict what the Chargers will do are taking the lens on the team currently, which is honestly something that everybody does. But if you're Jim Harbaugh and you just got a brand new 6-year contract or a lot of money, and your job is to build a sustainable future, to build something bigger than itself, you're not worried about what holes you have on your team. You're worried about getting the best player at a position that you value. So while people look on the outside on the Chargers and say, take a receiver because you don't have one, Harbaugh's sitting there saying, I need to fix the, and he made it clear, I need to fix the offensive and the defensive line. And so for me, knowing Jim, you know, he's got Slater at left tackle, good player. Pipkins at right tackle, not so sure, right? Slater at right guard, not so sure. Lindsey was hurt last year at center, not so sure. He's got two number one picks there in the offensive line because he's got Zion Johnson. So I think this is about linemen. I think this is about offensive and defensive linemen. Could they use a receiver? No question. But they could get that at 37. They could get that at 69. To me, this is about Jim Harbaugh taking a team building approach, whereas everybody predicting what he's going to do is taking a fill the need approach.
You wrote a lot about Harbaugh this weekend, the potential influence that he can have on this squad. Maybe for those that haven't gotten to read the article yet, again, it's available live at VSiN.com. Why you think that 8.5 win total might be a little too low for what this team can do?
Because they're going to be way tougher. You know, they couldn't win close games, Stormy. You know, every Charger fan knows this. They had a hard time trying to win a close game. They couldn't do it because they had no mental or physical toughness. Everything was done with a data sheet. You know, this is what we're going to do analytically. That's not how he does things. He's going to practice hard. Here's what I wrote about in the article. I don't think people really understand this. Jim Harbaugh was only an assistant coach for 2 seasons, and he was an assistant to the assistant. It wasn't like he had a group. He's been a head coach his whole career, and his foundation is based on his dad, Bo Schembecker, Jim Rockford, and the people, Bill Walsh and Al Davis. And so that's where his influence comes in, and he's demanding on the coaches, demanding on the players, and he takes his ability, his personality, which is ultra competitive, and manifests it within the team. And to me, that results in why he improves football teams.
The Chargers at plus 300, the second shortest shot in the AFC West behind only the odds-on favorite, Kansas City Chiefs, the defending Super Bowl champs. Let's go to the Denver Broncos there, who will pick next in the draft at number 12 overall. That's the first of what will be 8 selections for Denver in this draft. Some buzz about them potentially taking a quarterback, which is the favorite in their first drafted player odds at plus 105. They don't have a second round pick, so will they stick with Jared Stidham, go elsewhere offensively, maybe defensively? What are your thoughts on Denver at 12?
You know, every time I look at Denver, I say to myself, all they have is Jared Stidham at quarterback. I mean, they got Ben DiNucci. They only have 2 quarterbacks on their current roster. So don't tell me what they're going to do. Look at their depth chart. Like, Sean needs a quarterback. Like, I don't think Sean's dumb enough to believe that he's going to put all his chips in the middle of the table for Jarrett Stidham to win next year. Don't tell me that. He has an ulterior motive here somewhere. And I think people are always looking at, is he going to trade up? I think he's going to trade back. I think he's going to try to collect a second round pick. I think he's going to try to add a pick between 12 and 76, which is what his picks are. And then he trades back, and he knows that, you know, once teams get their quarterbacks, then nobody else is going to try to get him. And I think that would be his approach. I think quarterback has got to be a must. Am I saying he's picking one at 12? No. Could he take 76 and fly way back into the first round? Sure, could. Maybe he could do that. Makes if the package is strong enough. But I think it's got to be a quarterback at some point, and it's got to be early, because there's no way he's going into battle with just Jarrett Stidham and Ben DiNucci.
Another team in the division also projected by some to take a quarterback in this draft, picking right after them at 13 in the Las Vegas Raiders. They are favored to take a corner, minus 185, but some people have considered maybe Michael Penix being an option there. How do you feel that the Raiders are going to attack this early round?
Well, I think their head coach definitely wants a quarterback. I think there's no question. He's smart enough to know that, you know, right now I've got Gardner Minshew, you know, I've got Aiden O'Connell as a backup. I probably need a good young one, which would make sense. And I think ultimately that's something that he could do. But to me, you know, I think this has been very clear by Mark Davis, the owner of the Raiders, that that Telesco has the authority to make the picks. And don't kid yourself now. Mark Davis is involved too here. Mark Davis is going to have an opinion. I'm not saying he's going to demand who they pick, but he's going to have an opinion. I don't know if it'll be a corner, but to me, if they stay at 13, the corner from Toledo's, if he's there, is a great value. The defensive lineman from UCLA would be great value, although they don't need it. They picked Wilson last year. And offensive lineman, which I think will be a host of players. They need a right tackle badly. They're going to need offensive linemen. It's where I think Dave Ziegler and Josh McDaniels failed themselves when they went in there and they went and got the receiver and their offensive and defensive lines were nowhere near ready to handle what they did. I think that's the biggest mistake. Again, it goes back to team building. You get a new contract, build the team the right way. Don't fill these gaps. Build it the right way while you can.
And forgive me, while corner is still the favorite, I did say the wrong number, plus 150. The odds for corner to be the first position drafted for the Raiders, plus 160 O-line, quarterback plus 230. Then we've got the defending champion Kansas City Chiefs to round things out, Michael, who will have the last pick in the first round at number 32. Like I mentioned, odds on minus 225 favorite to get another win in this division where, boy, they have just reigned supreme year after year. They're favored to go wide receiver. I'm sure a lot of that has to do with not only the lack of success that wide receiver room has had lately, but then you throw the Rashee Rice situation into it. They did bring in Marquise Brown, but wide receiver still a favorite here, minus 110, followed by O-line plus 145.
All right, well, right now, their starting left tackle is Juana Morris, who was a third round pick last year. You think they're going that way? You think that he's going to be their starter to protect in? Maybe they'll sign somebody later, but I think that's kind of where they're going to go. But at 32, I don't think the Chiefs know where they're going. When you're at 32, you have no idea what's going to be there left for you. And I think you just got to be able to react and take a good player. Take somebody that can improve your roster. Forget about the position, because at 32 and you can't trade down, I think there's a perfect opportunity. I'm sure Kansas City would say to themselves, look, we'll trade down with somebody, because if whoever we're going to pick at 32, we'll probably get at 44. That's the logic that goes into it. And that's why I think the quarterbacks will go in the first round, because at the end of this draft, a team like Kansas City, if there's not a great, I mean, it's hard to find a left tackle in any round, so forget about at 32. If there's not a great tackle or a great corner there, they're just not going to turn a card in and pick a card for a guy just because they have it. They'll try to move out.
Yeah, I think that there's potential for a lot of trades to happen in the first round. Michael, what do you think?
I do, especially that when you get to that 20 range, right? Here's what we do know. As much as I want to pick defensive players, there's probably only about 8 defensive players in this draft that have first round grades on them. Just 8. Now, there could be as much as 12 go. I don't know. But it's not an abundant of defensive players. Some of those guys have medical to them. Mm-hmm. So you know that. And now you're into this offensive line, which, when does that break off? And so those teams picking at 21 to 32, they might be able to get the same player at 45.
Right.
Right? And I think that's what you have to take a real hard look at. Whereas fans see, oh, there's first rounders. No, most boards probably have 21 first round grades on players right now.
Great insight. We're going to hit the break here. When we come back, VSiN's own Mike Somich is going to join us, talk a little NBA. He's got some NHL on his mind as well. Plus, we still got a storm warning to come this hour. You won't want to miss it. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Here at VSiN, for a limited time, we're offering 2 weeks of our exclusive betting splits for free when you sign up at VSiN.com/splits. The betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action, find out where the public's betting based on the number of tickets, and where that money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Take advantage, though. It's a limited time offer. VSiN.com/splits is how you can claim your free 2 week access to VSiN's betting splits. Also up at VSiN.com right now, an article from our guy Mike Somich on opening round NBA playoff best bets. Somich joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line, VSiN host of The Handle, 9 to noon Pacific every weekend, 12 to 3 Eastern. You can also catch him on X at SamaBomb 18, where he's always dropping the great horse racing Sama Bombs there. Mike, welcome in. And before we get to your series plays coming up in the NBA, because it's Michael's favorite topic to discuss, the Philadelphia 76ers, if you were the Knicks watching last night's game, how are you feeling going into the series?
Oh, you're licking your chops, right? I mean, the big concern around the 76ers is you're going to have a healthy Embiid back or not. Because with a healthy Embiid, this team was dominant during the regular season. Without him, they're not nearly as scary. Yes, Maxey, very good. But Embiid gives them that just the difference maker on offense. Last year's MVP, obviously. And just really scary anytime he's got the ball. He can also stop on the inside. But you watch that game, man, I know Embiid can't go 4 rounds. I'm not sure he can go 4 games. And that really is as far as Philadelphia's going to go, is the health of Embiid. And that knee did not look great last night.
No, well, he's on the ground every play, Mike. I mean, come on. No, have you ever seen a good player fall down as much? I mean, I've never seen it. I mean, I'd hate to be the broom guy at the 76ers home games. You're constantly wiping the floor down.
He and Anthony Davis find a way to get on the floor more often than any 7-footers I've ever seen.
Were you surprised to see them favored in this series?
Yes, I think the Knicks should be the favorites here. I'm surprised they're getting so much Philly love, but again, it makes sense. If you look at if you isolate the record of Philadelphia with Embiid, it's better than the Knicks record from a win percentage perspective. And so I'm not shocked to see it, but you have to be betting on Embiid's health in a way. And I'm not comfortable doing that, especially what we've seen from Brunson. I thought OG Anunoby came back into the lineup, played well. We're not going to get Randall in the series most likely. So it looks like you're going to have a little banged up Knicks team too, but if this becomes Maxi versus Brunson, who do you want? I want Brunson. And that's kind of the feeling that you get when you watched Embiid last night.
How about, the series that, and I don't know if you've played anything on it, but I kind of wanted to pick your brain on the Mavericks-Clippers. I mean, the Mavericks-Clippers series, to me, is the one that I'm really excited for, because I think this could be like a 7-game series that we would expect in the next round, but we're getting it in the early round.
I agree with you, Michael. I did bet this one. I bet the Mavs -110. It was one of the series I wrote up for the articles that came out on Tuesday. We now see Mavs -125. So moved in my direction there. And I obviously agree with the move. I had the Mavericks as about a 120, 125 favorite. So I think the number's right about correct now. But this comes down to, like, if you just isolate the Mavs again with what they've done since the trade deadline, they add some size, add a second center. They've been very good defensively and rebounding, which are two of the things that they had struggled with traditionally. And then you look at their options that they have at the end of the shot clock, end of game, end of quarter situations. You've got Luka Doncic, who is just a shot maker. He can create open shots for others. And when it's not there for him, if you double him, guess what? Here's Kyrie Irving, one of the best shot makers in NBA history, who can also get his own shot as well as facilitate for others. They're just very, very difficult to stop. And then, I mean, do we trust Kawhi is going to be able to stay healthy? What about Paul George and James Harden, two players who have shrunk in the playoffs instead of grown? This is, to me, a Mavs series. And I think the winner of this series is the second best team in the West. And so it's surprising we get them here in the first round.
VSiN host and handicapper Mike Somich joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. You also don't trust this Cleveland Cavaliers team at all, it appears, based on your article. Why?
Not even a little bit. They're a mess. Donovan Mitchell's already out the door. He's not going to be a Cav next summer. And when you look at this Magic team, they're ahead of schedule. And a lot of times people penalize teams for being ahead of schedule. This is a very good young Magic team who is elite defensively. And that's what I think is going to come down to in this series. Cleveland, not exactly stellar on the offensive end. They've got Garland. They've got Mitchell. But you've got stoppers on the Magic. Suggs is top five, if not the best on-ball perimeter defender in the NBA. And you've got Jonathan Isaac, who the Magic had been playing around 20 minutes a game. If you look toward the end of the season, they started starting him. If they decide to start Isaac and Suggs, and that's the two people who are going to defend the perimeter for them, it's going to be a long series for Garland. It's going to be a long series for Mitchell. And when you look at the matchup between these two teams, the Magic split in the regular season 2-2. The two games that Cleveland won, Mitchell absolutely went for over 30 in both of those. The games they lost, he went for 22 and didn't play. Oh, by the way, he's missed 15 of the last 22 games as well. I just have a ton of issues here with how Cleveland's going to be able to score. I will admit, the Magic's offense a little scary in and of itself, because they don't love scoring all that much. And it's really Ben Caro and what he can do to be able to create for the rest of the team. Franz Wagner has had a tougher season. You're seeing him just being left alone from the 3-point line, where that was something that he was a true threat from early in the season and last year. The offense could be an issue here for Orlando, but in no way, shape, or form should they be +165 dog gear in this series. So I was excited to get a piece of them at that price. And this is a game or series where if it goes 5, 6, 7, start looking toward the unders, because both of these teams are going to win with defense in these games. And the shot creation is going to be difficult for both backcourts.
How about this Bulls Heat game without Jimmy Butler? Last year, this is when the Heat went on their run. They went on a 15-1 run in the final 3 minutes, and they were able to beat the Bulls, which I'm sure still irks the Bulls completely. Last night, Coby White went off for 42 points. He was dynamic and put an end to the Hawks. Do you like the Bulls here minus because Jimmy Butler's out?
Great pull there, Michael. A lot of people forget this Heat team should have been out in the play-in game last year. They snuck through with that late 15-1 run. I like the Bulls in this spot. I like the Bulls. Last night, I played them minus the points. I think this is a a good bad team from Chicago. They've got talent. They understand what they are. They've lost in some late game situations. I think they're able to get the job done here. And the Jimmy Butler loss is huge for this Miami team. Now it's Hero who needs to step up and be your number one offensive player. He's wildly inconsistent. He misses shots. He turns the ball over. I don't trust Miami's going to be able to get the offense to get through. So give me the Bulls on Friday.
Easy win and cover for them last night for sure. And how about Kobe White, a career high 42 points. It is, Mike, also the last day of the NHL regular season. Are you betting anything today on this slate, or are you already looking ahead to some of those series prices that have been posted for the playoffs?
So I didn't play last night. I'm not going to play tonight. Not a lot to play for some of these teams. So if I was going to do anything, I'd lean toward the overs. We do generally see more scoring in these late games where there's nothing left to play for them. But I didn't play anything tonight. I have a couple series that I absolutely love. Give me the Preds. I've talked about the Predators on this show how many weeks in a row now? Look, they're plus 130 against Vancouver, and people are going to point to the fact that Vancouver swept them in the regular season. They went 3-0 against the Predators. Well, guess what? All of those happened last calendar year. They were all December 18th or earlier. This is a different Predators team that we've seen in the second half of the season. UC Saros, one of the best goalies in the NHL. You got Philip Forsberg, Roman Josi. This is a playoff-laden team versus a Canucks team that played over their skis in the first half. I don't trust them here coming into the playoffs. And I love this draw for my Predators to win the Stanley Cup. They're still out there at 40-1 for some reason. You could get them at 48-1 earlier in the season. They get to draw the Pacific Division, which to me is significantly worse than the Central because of the way the seeding plays out. So they're the 7 seed. They played the lower point scoring winner from the regular season. That's going to be Vancouver. That means that they get to face the 2-3 winner in that specific side as well, which is going to be the Knights versus the Oilers. I love the fact that that's a second round matchup, and they're not having to take on the Stars. They're not having to take on the Avs. They're not having to take on the Jets. Three teams that are better than anyone we're going to see in the Central or in the Pacific. So I love the draw for the Preds here, plus 130. Also like the Central Division to win the Stanley Cup. I've talked about this one before, still sitting at 3-1, still the longest price on the board. You get four teams that you could see a Western Conference Finals between two of them if the Preds are able to make it. So I love that price at plus 300 as well. And then the other series I'm looking for, let's go to the Battle of Florida. I think this one's just grossly mispriced. I think the Panthers are way better than the Lightning, and the Lightning are getting some love because of what we've seen from them in the playoffs years past. But this isn't the same Vasilevsky that led this team to back-to-back championships and three straight Stanley Cups. Right now, you can get Florida minus 170. I think they should be closer to 240, 250 in this series. So I have a decent bet there on Florida at minus 170. Also took the Panthers minus a game and a half in this spot.
7-1 to win the Stanley Cup, the Florida Panthers are. Go ahead, Michael.
Well, I was just going to say, I know he has a baseball player, Red Sox Guardian. He loves those under five inning unders. Go ahead,
Mike. I do. We're about to have first pitch here. Give me Guardians, Red Sox, under 4.5, first five. Two teams that don't love scoring the baseball, and you've got two pitchers out there I think you'll be able to shut them down, especially early. Also like the early start for unders as well. So give me the under 4.5, first five, Guardians, Red Sox.
Way to go, Michael, for sneaking that in right under the radar. Great stuff before first pitch. Appreciate you, Mike. You're awesome.
You got it, Michael. Looking out for the people. Good work there.
There we go. Thanks, Mike. Well played, sir.
Absolutely, Mike. More we can do.
Yes. The Red Sox, minus 105, but not the favorite. Guardians a slight favorite there, minus 115, total 8.5. We're going to hit the break here. When we come back, though, Michael, it's time for our weekly role reversal. We got a storm warning ahead. Let's do it.
I love it.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use our code VSIN. New customers that do, bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. That's the code VSIN, V-S-I-N. Only on DraftKings, the crown is yours.
I love it. We got music for you, Stormy. Wow. You know, now we would never cut you off like they cut Billy Joel off on the playing Piano Man on CBS. That needs to be addressed. But anyway, this is my favorite segment of the week. So let's begin. Everybody wants to talk about the NFL draft, but they're really not sure how to bet this. So how would you tell people to bet the favorites in the NFL draft?
So there's a lot of layers to this, Michael. And you think about, we know these phrases, right, about how Vegas always knows something or the house always wins. Well, the NFL draft is one of those events where the house actually doesn't always win. And there can be an advantage for the bettors. And some of these numbers, even when they're odds on numbers that in a normal game you wouldn't feel comfortable laying, these things are being decided not on the field or the court, but in rooms where information can get leaked, where a Twitter post can move a market, where a Reddit post that has no concrete evidence can move a number and give you an opportunity to buy back on another player at a different price. And so I would just say here for my storm warning to the folks at home, don't be afraid to lay a number in the NFL draft, because it's just a little bit of a different type of bet to make. And one great example, I think, is a team we talked about on the program yesterday, Michael, the Titans, to take an offensive lineman with their first pick. It is juiced very high, minus 320. Do I love the idea of laying minus 320? No. But if you have the bankroll, you're not really that afraid of losing that bet, are you? Because you know the offensive line is a glaring weakness for Tennessee. They have to get their tackle situation fixed. You're rocking with Will Levis. You want to see what you have. You need to protect him. And this is a very deep and talented draft at that position. I quite frankly would be shocked if the Titans did anything with their first selection in this draft aside from an offensive lineman. So I don't care what the price is. I'm willing to lay it because I feel that confidently that the information is good, that that's what's going to happen.
But you wouldn't lay it with Caleb Williams at that ridiculous
number, correct? Well, but earlier on, though, in the process, you would, like when it was minus $5, perhaps, that's probably an extremely cheap price based on what the number is now. And you know that that's going to happen, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. The next warning you're going to give people is the sports books are doing their job. There have been a few. I wouldn't say there's been a lot. There's been a few betting scandals in recent memory. I'm sure you know more about this than I do, having grown up in the industry. But you think there's a positive effect of what has occurred, whether it's the Ohtani incident and obviously now with Porter.
So the Ohtani situation is a little bit different because that's obviously a bookmaker in California where things are illegal. And that was like a federal investigation of that bookmaker. Where I'm really coming from on this one are the incidents like Jonte Porter, like Jameson Williams, Calvin Ridley. We all remember the Alabama baseball situation where they had to fire Brad Bohannon because his buddy tried to make a $100,000 bet on a college baseball game and told people at the sports book, if you guys only knew what I know, right? So the reason that all of these incidences are even things that we're made aware of and we're put a stop to is because of regulated gambling. And because these sports books specifically brought these issues and these instances of suspicious activity to the leagues. And there's a lot of criticism on social media and everywhere on national television right now that is having a serious issue thinking that because leagues are having relationships with sports books and that teams have relationships with gambling entities, that it's gambling's fault and that it's regulated sports books and legalization's fault that all of these things are happening. Our guy JVT here at VSiN even shared a snippet from an NBC article on Twitter this morning saying about the Jonte Porter lifetime ban thing. There was an NBC article where it said Adam Silver must be held accountable for this league's total embrace of gambling. Jonte Porter fell into a world he wasn't prepared for, but the world he fell into is one of Adam Silver's making. Did Adam Silver create gambling? Has gambling not been going on since
the start of time?
Exactly, Michael. Like, there's bad apples in every walk of life, right? You're not going to walk into any high school in America and not have a kid cheating. Every year we hear about people using the performance enhancing drugs and having a suspension. And in every walk of life, there are bad apples that do things wrong and don't pay attention and don't do the rules. This is an adult that didn't pay attention to the rules and is stupid. And it, like, all these people that are doing these things are doing stupid things. And my thing here is just that sports books are the reason that we're actually finding out these information, getting it corrected, and being able to make examples of these athletes so that it does not happen like this moving forward.
I rubber stamp that warning completely. Now, what I might not rubber stamp here
you
too don't trust Bill Belichick, that all this ESPN reporting about Robert Kraft not trusting Bill. You have something to say about this. I can't wait. I'm sitting in my chair here on this one.
So, Michael, obviously the report comes out yesterday. Bill Belichick, big news, big news. Everything that's going on with the surrounding factors around the Atlanta Falcons job and the comments from Robert Kraft. I take the time to sit down and listen to the entire half hour of him on the Pat McAfee show yesterday, where it was revealed, Michael, that Bill Belichick does not like coffee. I agree. I don't trust that man either. I don't trust anybody that doesn't drink coffee. You think about his life and how many hours that he's putting in watching film, studying game tape, prepping a game plan. He's the first guy in the building, last one to leave. And he does not drink coffee. He does not believe in it. Are you kidding me right now? That's some serial killer behavior. True. I don't blame him. I don't blame Arthur Blank and Robert Kraft for saying, hey, I can't trust this guy. I can't trust this guy. That's serial killer behavior. We're saving Arthur Blank's life with him not being with the Atlanta Falcons.
I mean, he doesn't even like the smell of it. Like when I'm with him in a car and we're driving to somewhere and he's in the passenger seat and I'm driving, like he don't even like the smell of it. Like that's how far off he is. And so, yeah, it's been consistent since the moment. Now he'll drink tea, but I've never seen him drink. No Michael, coffee, never had a sip, hates the smell.
I love Bill.
I know, Stormy, I can't like.
I love Bill. I respect the game, but I think that me and Dan Campbell would get along much better. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I'll tell you another one. Like if you make steak for him, it's going to have to be like beyond well done.
No.
Like it's going to have to be well, well, well done. Like, yeah. And so, yeah, there you go. I'll give you another one for you. There's maybe this is too much information,
this is too much.
That's true. I think, yeah, that could give you another. I mean, I don't know how you eat steak. Like you couldn't eat a steak in Florence. They don't make steak like that. Like it's got to be really, really red. So, but you know, that's him. And see, and he not changed. You know, one thing about yesterday I thought was so good. He was authentic. And I know people believe that he is doing it to make people become more likable. He could care less if you like him or not. That's who he is. That's always who he's going to be. So I love it. I saw this on Twitter and I loved it. You're storm warning people, and I don't necessarily disagree with you. The West Coast is the best coach for watching sports. And I happily live here in the great Garden State of New Jersey. I live by Highway 9. I'm proud of it. But I have a hard time, thank God for YouTube, I have a hard time staying awake for the late game. Like, I'll be honest, I confess, I did not see Coby White's 42 points. I watched it this morning on YouTube. All right? I confess. I hold my hand up. But you have the perspective and give us the warning.
Yes. So Elliot knows how I feel about watching sports on the West Coast. And he sent me this tweet from an NBA writer, great social media follow, Miles Brown, who said the West Coast is wildly expensive, unbelievable, homeless, on fire every summer, full of poison air, running out of water. And depending where you live on Earth, might crack in half and swallow you whole. But the playoffs are so much easier to watch and it all evens out. And I just thought, yes, everything about this. Yes, you go ahead and you take your East Coast bias. You take your warm ocean water, your good bagels, your New York style pizza. You can have it all because your girl gets to bed at a reasonable hour. When it's 9:30 and you guys have tip off for an elimination game, not me. I'm over here just already like, I'm having dinner at 6:30. I'm minding my business. I can watch everything good. Like, I think this is the real reason why East Coasters have the negative talk about them being cranky and being a little bit mean overall, Michael. It's because they're not getting their sleep. Everybody's just, you miss the great marquee moments at the end of the night. You wake up, you have to hear about it on the radio. So you're upset from that standpoint. Or if you are staying up late to watch the whole thing, you're not getting all the hours in and you're waking up groggy and upset then. So I think that this is why people on the West Coast, we're just happier. We smile more. We have smiles. We have sunshine. We have, you know, you guys just, the bitterness adds up, I think, out there, Michael. That's why New Yorkers are so angry.
I think you're so right because you get caught up on stuff too. Like when I lived in Los Angeles and was writing Gridiron Genius, like I could watch the Sunday night game, you know, at 5:30 and at 8:30. And then I could still watch something else before I went to sleep. And the game starting at 10 o'clock was for me the best. I didn't have to wait till 1 o'clock to start the game. I agree, Stormy. I love the East Coast. I don't love the weather in the spring. It's horrendous, however, but it's sports. It's tough to watch.
I've lived on both coasts as well. I lived in Charlotte for a little while, so I did the 1 o'clock start for the NFL. Give me a 10 a.m., a mimosa, a Bailey's and coffee. Get the games going with breakfast. That's how I like it. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.